From the east to the west, I'm like Big Pop. Put a dope in the water, make this shit rock. Going straight to the top, no pit stop. Hey, I got my groove, I'm back on my groove. They want me to lose, I can't do that. I got my groove, I'm back on my groove. They want me to lose, I can't do that. I was on my grind like TikTok. From the east to the west, I'm like Big Pop. Put a dope in the water, make this shit rock. Going straight to the top, no pit stop. Hey, I got my groove.
All right, what's up, everybody? Another episode of the Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. I'm joined with Coach Kelly Rich and Jerry Joseph. Sorry about that. How's it going, guys?
Everything is great, man. How you making out?
Good, man. Just trying to stay safe, stay active. I know you guys are doing your thing. I've seen you on Instagram, Jerry, with the workouts, and Coach Kelly Rich still whooping everyone's ass 50 years plus.
52 to be exact.
That's awesome, man. But thanks for taking some time. I'd love to talk to you guys a little bit about what you guys got going on and talk a little boxing as well. So why don't we start it off with Jerry, I've been seeing your videos with your clients who are doing it online, and you know, there's a big movement right now for people to stay active, even though a lot of the gyms are closed and, you know, it's tough on people.
Yeah, man. So what I've been trying to do is just to make sure people are in the loop and just keep them engaged, because sometimes you can lose yourself during this whole quarantine. And sometimes people don't have, you know, the accessibility to go outside or do any exercise or have any equipment. So, you know, you can just do these home workouts. And what happens is I basically break them down specifically how to basically do them at home without getting injured. And it feels more comfortable to be in your house. So you don't have to worry about, you know, moving the things around. Use cans of beans, bottles of water, you use your own body weight. So just structuring different type of lives and time frames, whether they're in LA, whether in London, it doesn't even matter. Just being able to incorporate exercise so people can feel great about themselves and, you know, mentally stressed, less stress.
And then getting it for free on my ass.
No, that's awesome. I've seen some of your clients working with the resistance bands and like finding ways to get creative with it, right? And keep the muscles activated and everything. And I know people, obviously they got to follow you on Instagram to see your workouts and see some of the, you know, the plans you got for them. So I encourage everybody to do that.
Yeah, it's always like it's different, man. When you use some of these exercises, it's always just being creative. It makes it more fun. People be more engaged and just learning their bodies, different movements, functional movements, and it helps with the rehab work too. You'd be surprised, a quicker process, you know? So that's why I incorporate a different type of workout experience so people can just don't even know what's coming next, you know?
Yeah, exactly. No, that's awesome, man. And Coach Kelly, I've seen you, you know, putting in your work. You know, you're always working and you're a great follow as well, motivating guy to listen to. I'll let you take the mic here. I know you got I know you got a lot to say, right?
All I gotta say, you know, I'm coming for your ass.
Yeah, I'm training too.
You see a little cheesy push up.
Yeah.
You gotta do a little more than that to get the old man, you know that.
Yeah, I'm building. You're right. You know, I got to start somewhere, so I'm building up. But yeah, I've been, trying to run every day, and do my push-ups and a little core work to, stay in shape, because it's tough not being able to go to the gym or anything, and obviously box or lift weights or whatever. You know, it's
all of it is good work, though, nonetheless, though. You know, all of it is good work. Long as you stay active, you ain't, you know, being lazy and letting your body decay. So all of it is good work, no matter how many push-ups you're doing, no matter how many miles you're running. As long as you're out there moving and you're staying healthy, you got a fighting chance against this mess that we in, this coronavirus thing.
Yeah, you know? 100%. Kind of move on, you know, here. And I mean, you know, everyone's talking about the coronavirus. I feel like we got to give the people something else to listen to and some positivity. Yeah. So, you know, to hop into the boxing world a little bit with Coach Kelly, you know, obviously you grew up in Brooklyn. I'd love for people to hear a little bit about your story and kind of how you found boxing. Cause I know, you know, you were, you had some trouble at times growing up, staying focused, things like that. But boxing brought you a lot of discipline, and it really helped change your life.
Yeah, it absolutely did. I mean, when I was growing up, you know, we grew up in the projects in Brooklyn. And, you know, the area we was in, Bedford-Stuyvesant, was, you know, considered baby Vietnam. So it's either you was the prey or the predator, you know what I mean? And I chose to be the better, you know what I mean? To be the predator, you know, by default, though. But I was a nice kid until I was around 13, 14 years old, and my pops moved out. Went from a, you know, an A student and a 100 grade student to down to like a 65 average type student. But I always still maintain my intelligence, you know, my diligence as far as studying. You know, it didn't happen always in school, but always read a book or, you know, participated in some kind of research, you know what I mean? But through boxing, you know, fortunately my pop stuck around at least I was 13 years old, 12, 13 years old. And he got me into boxing. And then my older brothers kind of like, you know, forced me into it. They didn't want me to get, you know, picked on. They had a couple of bullies in the neighborhood. And they made me fight those guys. And once I beat those guys up, I knew I had something, you know. But these guys were terrorizing the whole neighborhood. So, you know, got to a point where I got super good at fighting. I started to fall in love with boxing and fighting in general. I used to run around with the gloves on my shoulders, challenging the toughest guys in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? And not to the point where I was trying to, you know, rob them or anything like that. But I wanted to see how good I was. You know what I mean?
Right.
Ultimately, you know, whoop some ass. So, and, you know, then, you know, you get caught up in the street life and things taking a little bit of a detour, a detour. And, you know, unfortunately, I tried to get back on track here and there. And I guess it wasn't my call to be a professional fighter. But what I did have to do was, you know, try to guide kids in the right direction once I got to a particular age, you know, when I had dealt with my party and my street life. So, you know, I started trying to save kids and, you know, trying to, you know, put them on the right path and teaching them boxing and keeping them in school and things of that nature. You
know? Yeah. No, I mean, it's awesome. Yeah, no, it's awesome to hear, you know, your story about how you use the sport, not only to, you know, kind of heal yourself, but also now you're using it to spread that on to the next generation and you know, provide that.
Yeah, man, absolutely. I mean, you got to give something back, because we all got a whole bunch of karma to pay, and I'm tired of paying it back. So through boxing, I was able to save myself some grief, I'm assuming, through karma, you know, and it was a wonderful discipline. You know, it transcends this boxing. You know, whatever you want to do, like, you know, you're capable of doing it, because you go through this rigorous kind of training that's demanding, that's challenging. And it's mano a mano type thing, and you really get to know who you are as a person. So the capabilities become, and it transcends the sport itself.
Definitely.
Your education, your people skills, and, you know, being able to deal with adversity, being able to come back from adversity, and have a collective fortitude. You know what I mean?
So 100%.
That's what it does for you.
Yeah, and that's awesome. And, you know, to toss it back to Jerry here, we can get into it a little bit later in the interview about, you know, obviously you're training pro fighters now, and that's how you've kind of, you know, gone through the ranks. Now you're not just training, you know, for exercise, but also training pro fighters. And Jerry, I wanted you to touch a little bit on, you know, kind of how weightlifting and fitness has helped you in your life growing up and today, kind of similar how boxing helped Coach Kelly with that, providing that discipline and kind of a positive route for you, right?
Yeah, so like me growing up, man, I was always athletic. You know, I always played in different teams and sports, but I was always skinny and lengthy. So me trying to basically get that growth, it took me like a mental discipline. I can go back and remember the day that I used to go to the gym for 7 hours a day. My friend thought I was crazy. He was like, yo, you need to definitely see a psychiatrist, bro. Because he would go from 3 o'clock and I would be this like almost like 1 o'clock in the morning, still in the gym. And he said, what are you doing with yourself? He said, I'm actually training my mind, bro. Like, I'm actually trying to love working out and utilize every machine possible so I can feel the muscle fiber ripping and tearing. But that's the only way I'm going to know if I'm really working out, if I'm actually focusing and really finding the dynamics of fitness on a different upscale. Because sometimes people work out and they just work out for the fun of it. I work out because I want to love it, and I want to be able to love my body in a different position because I want to look a different way. So me growing up and just working out constantly, doing innovative exercises, pushing cars, flipping tires, you know, rock climbing, you know, doing all these different type of things made me a stronger person, you know? So depending on like growing up, it always gives you like a battery on your back. How can I be better? Every day I wake up, how can I be better? I always observe other trainers and just watch how they look. And certain people, I try to critique a little bit, and I try to basically implement some of the stuff that I do. And I create things that are unorthodox, like natural disaster exercises, because you just never know what could happen. I'll do like a parkour class just to learn if I can jump, move different ways, just in case of earthquake happens, or, you know, just anything. Because you just never know. Like with this whole pandemic thing, I built my immune system to the point where I can condition myself so I don't get sick. Or, you know, we're in the gym constantly working. So it's like, it's a mental thing. It's also a discipline thing. So yeah. That's something you don't really teach. You got to want to learn constantly. Reminding. Kells reminds me every day, yo, certain things you got to take. Sea moss, you know, you got to make sure you eat your vegetables. Stay away from meat. Like, I was a big meat eater. I'm not even going to lie to you. Like, I used to love eating cheeseburgers and all this stuff. And I'm like, hey, if I can eat cheeseburgers and lift weights, man, I'll just be big. But knowing that eating all these things is killing me inside. I could physically outside look good, but inside I look terrible. So I stopped eating meat completely. Started eating a little bit of vegan food, a little bit of Presbyterian food. Balance it out here and there. But I feel way more better now.
And right? You look better.
Yeah, I was just too big. I was just too big. You know when you're just too big to just for no reason? And you don't have definitions, you're just big. Like, you can't be versatile. Like, I like to be versatile, athletic, fit, you know what I'm saying? So I can be able to move around, run, I can climb, I can swim, I can do everything. Because I'm able to just be that type of platform. But the person that can do everything. People
Superman.
Love
me.
Right. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So it was like, me growing up, I always said, you know what, I need motivation like this, because sometimes you think you know everything, but you really don't. It takes some time where you got to, like you said, be the quiet person in the room to learn what's going to happen later down in the life. So me being observant, you know, my brother right here helping me and teaching me certain things. Sometimes you're like, oh man, what is this guy really trying to tell me? But it's a lesson learned, each one teach one. So sometimes I learn and I'm like, you know what, okay, now it makes sense. Before, we would talk, and I'm like, all right, whatever.
But he'd blow me off.
I'd blow him off, and I'd be like, yeah, I got to go.
And I know he's blowing me off.
But now, I literally would sit down and, okay, Kel, I understand what you're talking about. And I'll take notes and then be like, oh, all right, cool. Now it makes sense. Exactly. All right, now I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I understand that 100%. So it was like growing up, being in the fitness world, and observing and watching people made me a more hungrier and trying to be a better person. So that's like my big motivation, just being around people that genuinely want you to be better, but also just want you to basically know that you don't need nobody else. You can do it yourself. You just have to basically be disciplined enough to get there. And you got to believe in yourself. That's the big key.
Yeah.
You know? That's the real big motivation for me, just keep every day grinding 24/7, nonstop, working, sweating. There's some days I'll be so tired. But I got a session at 5 a.m., you know, just finished training somebody. Oh, it's probably like at midnight, and then lock up, got to get up, train somebody, and then work out for myself, and then I get my daughter and everything, like, and come back here and train and do a live. Like, that's just crazy.
It's a lot.
But
yeah.
You got to be focused, because if not, then you'll lose yourself in this jungle, man.
Yep. And Coach Kelly, you know, to speak on the diet, you know, I know you're posting a lot about your mostly vegan diet, right? And I'd be curious to have you talk about some of the effects it's had on you past 50. I know you're like Bernard Hopkins or something, right?
I'm coming for him too. I'm coming for all of them. Help with my brother, you know what I mean? But yeah, so what I did, man, you know, I started, when you get past 45-ish, your body really started telling you need to change certain things. That's what started happening to me. I started, you know, I eat late at night and I wake up feeling dizzy. I'm like, damn, I'm in great shape. Why I feel dizzy? You know what I mean? Or sometimes you wake up feeling nauseous. I'm like, damn, I'm in I'm fucking running 10 miles. Why am I feeling nauseous? And then I started realizing something, you know, a few years back, it was my diet. That's what was killing me. Like Jerry alluded to earlier, you look great outside, but inside you're dying. So when, once I made that transition, I'm not fully vegetarian. You know what I mean? I don't eat any meat though, but I still mess around with a little bit of dairy. I don't drink milk at all, period. You know what I mean? But I still have cheese once in a while on my vegetarian burger. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what I did was, once I started changing all those things, I haven't drank milk in several years. I haven't touched alcohol probably going on 14, 15 years now. You know what I mean? I haven't, I never, you know, did drugs or smoked cigarettes really in my life, other than none. You know what I mean? But, you know, and then once I made that transition from not eating meat at all, I haven't had pork in 7 years. My problem is still I'm stuck on beef, chicken, and fish. I would have beef once a month and have fish and chicken on a regular basis. I cut it all out. Man, I wake up every day feeling groovy, man. Like, that's the only way I can describe it. You just feel super great. Every day is wonderful. Even if it's a bad day, you feel so good inside. It's a good day on the outside. You know what I mean? It turns into a good day.
Yeah.
So what people got to do is, though, you really got to move away from the meat. Because they're not making it how they used to do it back in the days when they had the, the organic farms. Now they shoot the animals up with all kind of penicillins,
preservatives, and all that. Yeah.
All kind of steroids to make them bigger, because they're not letting them run around free no more. They got them in little tiny cages. Now remember, you are what you eat. If the animal is insane because it's been trapped in a box for 5 years of his life, you're gonna eat that animal, and part of those animals' genetics is gonna go into your body. And you're going to start feeling a little off. And that's a fact, because you are what you eat. So once I move totally away from the meats, man, I feel super, man. I feel like I was saying, Jerry, I feel like Superman. You know, I'm 52 years old. Dude, I outrun all my fighters. We do 7-mile runs, 5-mile runs, and I'm beating them. Like 70% of the time, I can't say all the time, but 70% of the time, I'm beating them. I'm running 4 or 5 times a week. A workout for 2.5-3 hours. That's weights with calisthenics. And then I go run 5 mile minimum, maybe 10 if I feel great. And then I come back and do a minimum 1,000 sit-ups. I don't think nobody my age is doing that. Maybe a handful of people over 50 is doing that.
Yeah, once I've been playing around with my diet as well. I've been still eating meat, but really trying to cut out all sugar and pretty much carbs. And it's like really remarkable what happens once you make that switch and your energy levels, and you know, you just fat starts dropping off and everything. So yeah, you're right. I mean, diet is just such a big factor in your day-to-day life, how you feel and everything. It's cool to see.
I stayed for the interview though. I was feeling a little lethargic, so I had to go get me a Hershey's bar. I needed some chocolate.
Hey, chocolate's not that bad, right? A little dark chocolate and all that, it's all good.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Right before I got an interview with you, I just worked out for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
I hit the weights, the calisthenics, and I ran for 3 miles. Then I trained my boy Corey, as you know. You know Corey.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was feeling a little lower energy, so I had to get a quick pick-me-up.
Yep. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, it's good to see that you guys promoting that healthy lifestyle, and it definitely has benefits, man. It's a clear thing once you cut that sugar out, especially the sugar, the biggest thing, I think. Once you cut that out, just drinking water, you'll see some big differences.
But,
yeah, I'd like to...
It's to the point where I'm walking around and my friends that know me from being stocky, like, yo, you sick? You all right? I'm like, dude, want me to pull my shirt off? Let me share what I look like. You know what I mean? And once they see it, they're like, God damn, man, you in fucking top shape. I'm like, yeah, bro, stop eating meat. You know what I mean? I get my good sleep at night now. I try to get my 7 hours. Don't believe that bullshit about, yo, don't sleep, man. You get 12 hours of sleep. Don't believe that shit. Because you don't sleep, you become irrational. You start making irrational decisions that will set you back in the long run. Because you won't be thinking clearly.
Oh, yeah. Sleep is important.
7 hours, if you can, 8 hours of sleep a night, if you can. Especially if you work like a maniac, you know what I mean?
100%. I want to touch on, some aspects of being a trainer, whether it's in boxing or fitness. I think there'll be some similarities, but obviously kind of different worlds. But you know, with being a boxing trainer, you know, I was curious, you know, sort of the balance of training the person, the fighter, like when you have them in the ring, you know, not only are you training them for skill, to build their skill set, but you're also, you know, kind of managing that individual's emotions and managing that person as they go into a fight. You know, I'll toss that to Jerry afterwards, but Coach, I'd like you to maybe talk about sort of that balance there when you're training a fighter.
Okay, yeah.
So skill and training them, you know, as a person as well.
The skill level is definitely a necessary feature they have to have, or to help them to propel them to the next great level. Managing their emotion is super challenging because you got to remember they get hit in the face, they start to feel things they never felt before, like you actually go unconscious, you know what I mean? So that'll scare you, and it's something that have control of your own physical body. But the main thing is the endurance. The training goes hand in hand. Jerry's training goes hand in hand with my boxing. Without the training, they won't last around. So it kind of goes hand in hand. And that's, I would say to a certain degree, the training is more necessary than the actual physical abilities. Because the guy who worked the hardest normally lasts the longest. You know what I mean? So the training is very important when it comes down to a fighter. And they say it all the time. Hard work beats talent any day of the week. And that's an actual fact.
Yeah, I was gonna bring up Sean Porter as kind of an example. Like, I know, no disrespect to Sean Porter at all. I'm a big fan, and he's obviously got boxing skill. But like a guy like Errol Spence, when in their fight lead up, you know, he was talking a little shit to him, and he said, you know, you're just an in shape street fighter. But they ended up having an absolute war. So it's like, that speaks a lot to one, he's obviously tough as hell, but when you have that level of conditioning and that dog in you, it can overcome a skill difference.
All the time, it happens all the time in boxing. Guys think they're so pretty, and they go in there, and they think I'm going to move around, dance around, and outbox this guy. I got all this talent. And the guy, all right, you might beat him up for the first four rounds, and then we start getting into that seventh round. They get you around that eighth and ninth round. Now you're talking deep water rounds, and your feet are stuck to the floor like you got cement shoes on. That's when that hard-working guy starts dismantling you. You know what I mean? And that's when you start questioning yourself. Oh, do I want to get knocked out in front of 40,000 people plus? You know what I mean? And that's when the hard work kicks in, and normally the guy with the hard work at that level of the game will win. Now, if you got them both, you're in good shape. You ready to be a Floyd Mayweather or right. Earl, you know what I mean? Manny Pacquiao at right. that point, you know what I mean? Bernard Hopkins, you know what I'm saying, at that point. You know what I mean? But you got to have that, and you got to be in top shape. You got to have that endurance. You got to have the correct training. As you see now, a lot of fighters are moving to a guy like Jerry, the trainer. You know what I'm saying? They're moving to his kind of workout, the high-level cardio, the heart rate, getting the heart rate up, the band. They're moving to that kind of conditioning because that's longevity work.
Yep. And, Jerry, if you want to speak on that too, sort of the same question, original question I had for Coach, you know, about sort of training the person in terms of their skill. I guess it could relate to their form, making sure, you know, everything's correct. And then also, you know, managing and motivating the person that you're training, kind of that balance there.
Man, one thing can sum everything up is like mental toughness. You know, actually just working with Coach Kells gave me a different perspective on fighters. Like, you know, like, me first time going in and watching actually a physical fight in the ring, like literally live, you know, like these guys are actually putting their physical bodies into war. So it was like, you know, that last 12th round, they just trying to fight, continue to keep going. And like I said before, that's where the conditioning part comes into play. And to see who's really the toughest person to survive, the last man surviving. And sometimes you gotta like really mentally block out all that pain and just go, because what happens is your body gives out. Once your body gives out, And if you don't really find a little bit of speckled heart inside you to push through that, you just gave the other person the victory. And sometimes with exercises that I utilize, I put a person that's comfortable in an uncomfortable position. Because what happens is when you get into a ring, that uncomfortability will make you comfortable now. It's like, all right, cool, you know, damn, I'm in the corner. What should I do? This guy's killing me right now. Maneuver yourself out and suck it up and figure ways out to basically get angles and condition yourself to push through. If my arms are tired or dead, I can't even punch. Figure a way out. Use your legs. Move around or just, you know, toy with them a little bit like that until you can get back into that position back again. Because sometimes your mind plays tricks on you. And like, man, my mind is telling me to go, but my body's telling me no. But like, you got to learn how to balance that out. And then me learning how to basically utilize exercise with boxing made me even a better trainer, because I've never really done that before. I never usually worked with fighters. It's actually the first time I actually really hands-on for 3 years working with fighters, learning different footwork movement, learning how they step forward, how they condition themselves, how to corner themselves and throw things at them so they can, their reflexes is just like that. So it was just like a natural reaction type of thing. So allowing them to be able to equip physical fitness with boxing and giving them that versatility is amazing. So it's like you can get a fighter that's like, he could be 20-0 or whatever, like or 30-0 or whatever, but if he doesn't have that extra balance, there's going to be somebody that has that full thing, and he's 1-30 to get him. So you always want to be prepared and try to say, you know what, let's mix it up a little bit. Let's add a little bit of different stuff. Sometimes I'll have fighters on 1 foot balanced on the bolster ball because they're like, what is this for? But I'm like, this is for balance. You'd be surprised. This move right here could allow you to stand ground and you don't get knocked down. Because one little could sum up the whole fight. And then after that, your body just draws into that. But getting punched and being in that position, oh shit, I remember when I did this exercise and I felt that same feeling, let me bounce back up. And it gives you like a trigger reminder, like, oh shit, I'm back. So it's not like a little being afraid, because sometimes, you know, I've noticed when some fighters get hit, they say, oh shit, this guy just really hit me. Sometimes you've been wild and then you get dizzy and then boom. That already dazed you to the point where you already gave the advantage three rounds ahead for this guy to say, do the same thing constantly. Now it was like, what should I do? Where do I fall back on? That's when you added certain things that I've incorporated to make them feel, all right, cool, confident enough to basically do these things and get in there and then mentally stay focused. So like balancing it out, adding a little bit of, like I said before, unorthodox exercise that people don't normally do to be in a position, because I use battle ropes. Battle ropes, you put the ropes maybe for like 60 seconds or for a minute. And then after that, get him back with the punching with the weights back and forth. It's just a different movement. Because sometimes one movement you can't use, but the other one you can. So it helps out in the same situation.
Yeah, no, it kind of makes you think a little bit about Wilder, Fury, their last fight, and you know, Wilder losing his legs a little bit, obviously due to Fury putting pressure on him, and probably, you know, it seemed like he hurt him behind the ear pretty early on in the fight. But it makes you think that could be something for the trilogy, where Wilder really looks to focus on his balance from your perspective, Jerry, like in the gym, and then coach. Yeah. I know, you know, a lot of boxing like analysts and people were kind of talking about Wilder's footwork and how it was, you know, flawed and incorrect at times. When he was backing up, he was moving his front foot forward backwards, which is a no-no. I don't know if you can want to speak to that a little bit in terms of.
I was going to say, not to cut you off, but I was going to say it reminds me of way back in 2001 and 2002 when my good friend Victor Roundtree, who passed away, great dude, love that dude, miss him. And he used to train Saddam Ali early in his career. And they used to do a particular drill. That's what we say, you know, Vic, why you do that shit? That shit is dumb. He should have Saddam Ali hold the back, hold his forehead on his back, bent over, and spin around in circles until he got dizzy. And then he should do pad work with him.
Yeah.
I just say, why are you doing that shit? I said, that should be us, but it's retarded. Then once he sent me down, 2 months later, because he didn't want me to be better than him, He sat me down 2 months later and explained it to me. He said, Kel, sometimes fighters get hit and get knocked on balance. Their equilibrium is off. So they go through this particular stage where they're unbalanced, they're unfocused. So now if I give him the fight off instinct while he's off balance and not focused, when he gets to the ring and then he falls into that situation, he'd be able to prevail. I said, damn, that's fucking genius. That's next level. And that's back to what Jay was saying. He do things to make fighters uncomfortable until they get comfortable with it. The same mindset, same type of formula for as far as putting a particular workouts and program together. So great, my brother. I love you. You was a genius. And I learned a lot from that cat. So that's how Saddam Ali, if you ever see him fight, unfortunately, sometimes he got hit and got buzzed. But when he did, he still was able to fight to a certain degree. You know what I mean? And that was one of the great tricks that Victor Malentree showed me as far as keeping your balance through particular exercises as a fighter.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, those unorthodox training methods and things like that are, you know, a great tool for fighters for balance and footwork and all that. So it's cool to hear you guys talk about that. But from a motivational standpoint, as a trainer.
That's why Saddam Ali became world champion. When he did get hurt by Cotto, he came back and lit his ass up. That's my boy. I love that kid.
So I mean, like, from the motivational standpoint, from a trainer and a coach, I don't know, Coach Kelly, if you had a specific moment where, you know, there's some clips of, like, Teddy Atlas, for example, with Tim Bradley. I don't know if you remember that clip where he's talking about they got to be firemen and walk through the fire. You know, a real motivational clip. And is there, go ahead, if there's any moments like that for you.
Yeah, I had those moments, but they're a little more graphic than that. I was cussing and
anyone in particular? You can swear on this. It's all good.
You know, I was like, motherfucker, what the fuck are you doing? Get this fucking bum out of here. Why are you playing with this fucking guy? You got the whole world watching. Let's get to work. Get rid of this motherfucker. You should have got rid of him 4 rounds ago. And then, you know, my guys went out there and knocked him out a round or two later. But, yeah, I had plenty of those moments, man. Sometimes you got to jump in their ass a little bit to remind them what they're there for. You got to remind them, they don't get paid by the round. They don't get paid by the minute. They don't get paid by the second. The job is to get in and get out without getting hurt. So sometimes you got to be a little graphic, you know. I mean, some guys just smack guys in the face on your reserve. But I never went to that extent. But I get why he did it, though. I mean, that was his tactic to motivate his fighters at that particular moment. Mom would just lie and screaming and howling and getting in their face. Sometimes little spit fly out, but, you know, that's part of it. But they do sharp look in their face, but they go out there and do their job. So, yeah, several weeks, man, plenty of those moments.
And that just really comes down to knowing your fighter, right? Because, I mean, there's probably some guys that maybe wouldn't react positively to that if you were getting in their face. It's knowing how to motivate and push the right buttons.
Right, exactly. I mean, you be around these kids more than you be around your wife, you know what I'm saying? Or you're around your own family. Sometimes in the gym with them, I mean, it's more than just being in the gym. Sometimes, you know, it's further than the gym. Sometimes, you know, you're with them four hours in the gym. The next you know, you go on to lunch with them. The next you know, you're dropping them off at home. The next you know, you might sit down and have a conversation with them about their personal life, women, family, you know, things of that nature, their future, their dreams, their desires. You know, it becomes more than that. So you really get to get into their mind. They'll tell you what they expect for themselves. So you got to learn how to match that with motivation.
Right.
You know, it's challenging. You got to be basically a psychiatrist, you know, and a psychologist at the same time. But it's doable if the kid was willing to listen.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, man, you have to play those kind of roles, man. It's like I said, psychiatrist, psychologist, father, mother, you the uncle, you the brother. You know, you the little sister, you the future baby they're about to have, or the baby they're thinking about, you all those things are in a nutshell in that moment.
Yeah.
You know? And knowing that, you know how far to push them.
Yeah. And Jerry, you kind of have to do that too, right? For a lot of your clients and find the right buttons to push and how to motivate. Cause I know you got all types of different clients. You have actors, you know, people, musicians, like all different type of flavor, right?
Man, it's like ice cream, man. But you know what's so crazy? When I studied Jordan and God rest his soul, Kobe Bryant, how relentless they were when it came to perfection and just like really being on it. Like these guys would literally, Kobe would be in the gym when the game is over and still taking shots, Jordan would do the same thing. Work on a move and constantly keep working on the move and working on the move. When a client comes in here and they actually want to get trained, I necessarily have to take my time to understand them from like a different aspect. Like, I need to know what triggers them. I need to know what their mood swings are, or how do you feel about working out, if they really like working out. Because sometimes people lack the motivation, and sometimes people want to work out, but they just don't know how to and where to start. So like, doing proper assessments give me a great standpoint on how people would basically continue this journey with me. And so far, you know, knock on wood, we've been good. Like, there's no setbacks with people. People just love the energy, and I can feel the energy back from it because great consistency. You can see when the changes happen, and they can feel good about themselves, and they'll wear their clothing, and they'll go out and they'll get a compliment, and they'll feel good looking at themselves in the mirror. And what happens is it opens up a different type of element in their life now. Like, wow, this is crazy. I don't even wear these jeans anymore. Or, man, they do these workouts. You'd be surprised. I get goosebumps when I see some clients doing an actual real push-up that some people can't even do. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, or a pull-up. Or, you know, just going through the exercises and say, oh, what's next? What's next? Before, they used to be like, oh, man, you're killing me. What's next? So that makes me as a person, all right, now I got to turn it up a little bit more now because they already took to the next level. So each level is like, each progression is a great thing for me because it helps me say, all right, I'm really doing what I'm doing. I'm making sure they're basically doing it correctly. We're watching proper form. We're also making sure that they're enjoying it, because if they don't enjoy it, they won't necessarily want to do it anymore. Right? You got to enjoy working out, because that's the only way that your lifestyle will continue to grow, if you enjoy something, you know?
And to add to that, like, we're perfectionists. We're real trainers in our field. We're not the trainers that be screaming and hollering and, you know, I'm not taking no shots at nobody, but you come here, we're really gonna train you. If you say you wanna learn boxing, I'm gonna teach you real boxing. I'm not gonna do romper room with you. If you wanna do romper room, the guy's screaming at you with the music playing all crazy loud and tell you to hit the bag, come on, you're doing great, not even watching you, then you go someplace else. If they really want to learn how to fight, I mean, you don't have to take it far as wanting to be a professional at it or even an amateur at it. But if you really want to learn how to fight, I'm a perfectionist. I'm going to teach you how to fight. Look, when you walk out of here, you're going to be confident, and you're going to know what I showed you actually works, if God forbid you ever have to use it. You're going to be confident in it. And Jared's the same way. If you walk out of here, you're going to know you and your ass is in shape. But we get joy out of being perfectionist and seeing people succeed.
Yeah, I think there's, it's really important to be teaching the real fundamentals and like the real, what boxing really is. You know, it's great for people to use it as a workout, but it's important to have perspective on what boxing really is. I mean, me and my first guest, this kid, Mike Hughes, on the first episode, he's won Golden Gloves three times and three or four times, I believe. And he actually just recently turned pro. He's a trainer at Church Street Gym. And he talked a little bit with me about, you know, the difference between real boxing and Instagram boxing. And, you know, he helps people get in shape through boxing. Some of his clients, you know, that just want to get a workout. But, you know, it was pretty funny. You know, he's like, you know, people kind of lose perspective of, you know, what looks good on Instagram and then what's actually going to work. There's a lot of people who can do fancy pad work, and that's not necessarily how it's going to go down if you actually get in a fight.
he get kudos for that.
Yeah.
I appreciate him for that, because everybody look at the Instagram fighting. That's not fighting. My wife tell me all the time, I'll watch a movie and watch a boxing movie or somebody even shadow boxing or working out. And I'm like, that's not real. That's not real. It's a movie. I said, no, but that's not real boxing. Yeah.
That's what Mike Hughes, he was saying. It's kind of probably came from Floyd a little bit, right? Because, I mean, in those 24/7 videos, him and his uncle, rest in peace, you know, are doing the fancy mitt work. And it's really just for him to kind of go through the muscle memory, right, and get a little loose. But people kind of took that as, oh, that's what Floyd's doing. Like, that's how to box. Like, oh, I'm going to get good at doing, you know, the pat.
Right. They were watching fight. He don't do half that shit in the fight. He probably do maybe 15-20% of that shit in the fight. You know what I mean? What he actually do, he really relies on his fast reflexes and his fundamentals and his defense.
Right.
He don't do all that fast punching all that. He don't do all that shit. And that's what we get it. Like you said, that's just for muscle memory. And keeping your reflexes sharp. That's not for you to go in the ring and try to do all that fancy shit. You get knocked out trying to do it because it's too many openings to do that. It's too take too much time to do that. You know what I mean? So your boy get coolness for that, man.
Yeah.
I like the way you think.
Yep. And you know, I'd like you guys to, you know, you're training you know, a couple of your pro fighters, both you guys work with them. Oscar Moreno and Alex Rivera, you know, some of those guys, I'd like you maybe to touch on their how hard they put in the work in the gym with you, Jerry, and with Coach, and how that all comes together as a team here with GGE.
Well, with Oscar and Alex, man, these guys are just like two different special kids. You know, like, it's like having like little brothers. You know, when they're growing up with you, you want your little brother to do well. But you see that the energy. I remember the first time I seen Oscar fight, and I said, this kid is savage. I was like literally in the crowd, like standing up, like yelling. That's the first time I ever seen him fight. And I was like, I caught goosebumps standing up. There was this lady that was arguing with me, sit down. I'm going for the other guy. I said, I'm going for this guy right here, man. And they were just, man, they were going blow for blow. Like, Oscar would get him with a combination. The kid would get, but it was like Oscar was just going in, like, hey, I said, this kid is short, but he has like a crazy engine fire in his back. Like, he can't stop. Once he starts, that's it. So I saw that fire in him, man. It's like, it's just good. Like, this kid could be a potential world champion, man. Like, he just puts the work into it. So training him and getting him conditioned and just watching him grow and just be hungry, that's special. Going to Alex. Alex is the same way. Seeing Alex spar and just basically putting that same workout in, and right, just sometimes just seeing it here and seeing him in the gym right here and just like hitting the bags, like he's getting stronger. And I'm just like, man, Alex, you're gonna put a denim against the wall, bro. Like wall back, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just that, just seeing the progression with these guys and just constantly, you know, getting better and better. That's great, man. It's like, it's different.
Yeah, man. So, you know, Alex. Let me break it down real quick. Alex, the particular kid, came in a lot older. You know what I mean? His father passed away, unfortunately, his real biological father. And he wanted to prove to his father he could do boxing. He did some amateur stuff, but they don't have an extensive amateur background. So my goal with Alex really is to get him full wind and let him help us run GGE Enterprises. This to satisfy his father's little dream. That's all his career is about, basically, at this point. You know what I mean? And if he continues to win and turns to something beautiful, but he's 32 years old, the reality of it is, and in his weight class, his career should be on the downside of a world champion at 24 or something like that, you know, at the downside of his career. So I'm just going to give him four wins and keep it moving, you know what I mean? And make him, you know, he's actually a partner now with GGE Real Estate Company and help him let us run our enterprise. Now, Oscar, on the other hand, he had the intention, like Jerry said, to be a real superstar. You know what I mean? The last fight that he lost, it was kind of a combination of everybody's fault. Me, promoter, and Oscar. I mean, the kid came from the fight at 126. He came at fucking 130. And by the time he hydrated up the next night, he was like 145. Even though he was, you know, a 50-50 fighter, but he did never been knocked out. At the time, I thought Oscar was invincible. You know what I mean? But he was, you saw him be laying guys out. You know, destroying them. You know what I mean? So, It was me, I guess, a little bit of my ego, thinking this kid could do anything. He was Superman, and it turns out he wasn't, you know what I mean? Fortunately, he didn't get knocked out. He didn't get hurt in that fight. He only lost by 1 point. One guy made it a draw, and the other two guys gave the guy the fight by 1 point. You know, if Oscar did a little more, he would have got a draw, you know what I'm saying? So I learned the lesson. We all learned the lesson in that fight. If a guy ain't making a weight, don't fight him. This is something I've been new about, but like I said, I thought Oscar could fucking kill anybody up to 160 pounds. I just have a guy, you know, I just have a small guy 160 pounds in the gym. And then you call the Tasmanian devil and the punctuating pit bull, and he was hurting these guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, destroying this guy. But it's a little different as a professional fighter, so I take the blame for that. Moving forward, at 118, and he did hurt the guy a couple of times in that fight, the guy did translate into Oscar, and he did hurt him. At the right weight, Oscar's going to destroy everybody. So moving forward now, I'm going to have him fight 118, the highest 122. And we're in the works of right now getting him a new contract with a new promoter. You'll be hearing about it after this epidemic is over. And I don't want to jinx it. And from there, we'll be fighting the right fights. He needs 4 wins, and he'll be in position to fight for an interim belt or a world title at his weight class. So, and everybody got their eye on him. Like I said, this is a fluke. And now this epidemic slowed us down. But we would have been 2 fights in, probably 3 already. You know what I mean? On the win side. So he'll be back. He's going to have a nice little, 4 or 5 year, got 1 to 7 year career, because he's still young. And he should be a world champion. I can see him being a world champion at least 2 weight classes. You know what I mean? At 118 and 22. And if we get lucky and the money's big enough, maybe he'll go to 126 again. You know what I'm saying? But he's going to bounce back. He's going to be a great fighter, man.
Yeah, no, he's a great kid. I've talked to him a few times, and he's I spoke with him a week or two ago, and he seems super hungry and ready to get back in there. So once all this craziness is over, I can't wait to see what he does. It's gonna be exciting.
Yeah, I told him you gotta brush up on his interviewing skills.
He's as long as his skills in the ring are good, that's all that matters, right?
No.
If he's delivering the knockouts, if he's delivering the knockouts, that's all you need.
Yeah, well, that's nice. But he's an educated kid, dude, with the college and everything. But
right.
I guess he's shy in front of the camera, so that'd be having stumbling on his words sometimes. But once we sharpen that up, you know, that transcends him into, who knows, TV, singing. Oscar De La Hoya did it, you know what I mean?
Why not, right?
Up in those areas.
That's awesome. So, I'd like, you know, you guys, obviously you got your team and GGE Fitness and GGE Studio and the foundation. If you guys want to touch on everything that you got going on, whether it's the foundation, the real estate, everything.
Stop company.
But if you guys want to talk a little bit about, you know, GGE as a team and what you guys got for the rest of 2020 planned?
I go first. No, we got GGE Enterprises. We also have, that's the mother company. We also have the brothers and sisters. We got GGE Real Estate. We got our GGE Foundation, which is big on our foundation. Our goal is to ultimately help and save kids. That's the biggest plan. I'm not just saying to get donations. That's really our agenda. Then we have our GGE Fitness Studio, obviously. We work out here. We train our actors and fighters and our friends and, you know, family members, things of that nature. And we also work on a GGE stock company that's going to be later on down the line, about probably 2021 summer. You know what I mean?
Are you promoting as well?
What happened?
Are you doing promotions as well, GGE? Because I thought I saw something about maybe potentially doing some promoting. I know Oscar is a free agent, and I didn't know if there was anything building there.
Right, yeah, well, like I said, with Oscar, we're working on something. We got a few people that are highly interested in making him a superstar.
Yeah.
And that fight was a fluke. So I got my boy Corey. I don't know if you can see it, CY Nation Promotions. You know, that's my boy down south from Maryland. So he's a good friend of mine, Corby Sanders. We work with his promotion company right now. Like I said, several other promotion companies right now we're working with. So, like I said, Oscar's going to have a great future. You know what I mean? As long as he keeps his head on straight and stays in the gym. You know, you see he's in quarantine working out in his garage. So he's going to have a great future.
No, I'm excited. I'm excited for all this to get over and we can get back to boxing. There's so many fun fights on the horizon for some of the local guys in Brooklyn, but also, you know, the some of the superstars, Canelo, and we got the Wilder Fury trilogy already signed for. We got a lot of movement in the heavyweight division, some guys on the rise. And, you know, I'd love to get a little perspective from you guys on what you think is going to happen in the trilogy, if it's going to go down the same way between Wilder and Fury, because they're going to run that back.
Well, I think if it happens again, I think maybe this time Wilder might come back. He might. It's a tough, because Fury, you know, Fury's not in tip-top shape, but he knows how to move. Like, he's a big, like, freight trader. He knows, yes. And, like,
got some fat on him.
Very athletic, but he just got outshone, like, literally. And it's crazy.
My perspective, Fury gonna beat the hell out of him. Any day of the week, 100 times out of 100, Fury beats the hell out of Wilder. For the simple fact, one, he got two left feet, Wilder. Two, he stands too erect when he fights. Three, he leans head back when he punches, which is a no-no. You're not Muhammad Ali. You don't have flexibility and reaction time like that. And he relies on the right hand. He made zero adjustments for the second fight. How are you going to a fight and make no adjustments? None.
He needs to get trained over here, man.
You know what I mean? It's crazy. This dude, Fury, made 3 to 5 adjustments and kept relying on the
Yeah, what'd you think about Fury making the switch over from, you know, obviously in their first matchup, he was way more defensive and looking to just stay on the outside, outbox him. He had Ben Davidson as his trainer. And then for this fight camp, totally changed his body, put on a lot of muscle, came in strong, and also joined, you know, Kronk Gym. With Stewart and you know, fully changed his style and marched right forward and controlled the distance really, and just
brilliant. Because sometimes you got to know, as a fighter and as a team, coaches, managers, promoters, sometimes you got to bring in help. You don't fire your staff; you just bring in somebody to help your staff and to help you. Ultimately, at the end of the day. You know what I mean? That was a brilliant move. I think they did everything smart down to the T. I think bringing Sugar Hill in was smart, not because Sugar Hill was a fighter before, because he learned from one of the greatest trainers in the world, Manuel Stewart, his uncle.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you bring all that experience to your camp? And the fight was so simple as far as making the adjustments was, walk him down. He can't fight going backwards. Stay away from the right hand. Smother him. Bend him over. He weighs 120 pounds, like, and he can imagine. Now you put on 30 more pounds of muscle, and still got flexibility.
Coach, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I wasn't Mark Breland in the Kronk Gym. I was a little surprised that he didn't believe that Fury was going to march forward the way he was talking before the fight. I didn't believe it, but he did. And I was surprised because I thought Breland had been in Kronk Gym when he was a fighter, right?
Yeah, he was in there sparring with Thomas Hearns, all the great fighters that in his era.
Right. But so I wonder if he really expected Fury to, like, fully embrace that style, or what the thought was there.
Like, Mark Breland been around the block a long time, but dude went to the Olympics and won. So he knows boxing. He was in one of the top gyms as a kid, the Kronk Gym as a kid. Picked up tons of experience and knowledge at the same time. So saying that is to say this. He knew what Fury was capable of doing. He already knew it. He said, dude is super flexible. He's like a piece of biscotti. No matter how much weight he put on, he's going to have that kind of mobility. He knew that already. And then on the same time, he knows his fighter. My fighter is a 1-2-beat fighter. Hopefully he can get over it, hit him with the big shot and get rid of him. If you give him too much, he ain't going to do nothing. So throw the 1-2, throw the double jab, right hand. Finish with a hook. Basic boxing, that's all Wilder was capable of doing. And if you would have given anything other than that, he would have done nothing and probably got knocked out in three rounds.
And did you agree? Did you agree with Breland's stoppage of the fight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And Wilder, like I said, I don't get nobody's business, but Wilder is a prick for doing what he did to Mark Breland. Mark Breland, on top of being a good trainer, on top of being an experienced trainer, on top of being an educated trainer, on top of being like a classy trainer, Duke is a beautiful dude. All the way around the board. You can't say nothing wrong about Mark Breland in his personal life or in his professional life. You can't. Duke is a stand-up cat. And the reason why I can say that personally, because I worked with Mark. We had a fight. We shared a fight at one time. And he said, Kel, you do that, I do this. He didn't step on my toes, and I damn sure didn't step on him. I learned from him. I sponged off him. But I didn't know. I learned. I sponged off him. So Mark Breland is a straight-up stand-up cat. And for him to do that to Mark, what he did at the end was horrible. Was a black eye for him. Two black eyes. For him and a busted nose and a bloody mouth. And it was a black eye for boxing. Where fighters, when a guy is saving your life and you got the ability to shut him down and kick him out like that without no repercussions, that's fucking horrible, man.
Yeah.
I get emotional talking about it because I know Mark. Mark got you all the way to that level. And he literally saved your life. You was getting pounded out. You was two punches or maybe three punches away from getting killed or being in a coma. And you treat him like that? Man, you're a piece of garbage, man. I know emotions run high, but you don't do that to people, bro. And even if he wasn't a close friend of yours, like a father figure, you or a family member, you still don't treat people like that. Don't let him in the locker room. Stick security on him. What? Are you crazy? From what I understand, that's what happened. Didn't let him in, and Mark was crying like, yo, bro, I love you. I just saved your life. Go back and watch some tape, idiot. Go back and watch the tape. The man gave him a second life. Are you crazy?
Yeah, it was tough to see that because it's like, you know, Breland is, I think he definitely, you know, when I was watching the fight live, I was like, no, don't stop it. But then after a couple minutes, I was like, that was definitely the right call. You know, Wilder was, he was hurt very early in that fight. And
Brownie got hurt or something like that.
So it didn't even seem like, I know he was trying to make the argument and some people were saying, you know, you never can throw in the towel on a guy like Wilder because he always has that one hitter quitter. But the thing is I don't even think he possessed the power at that point because he was so hurt and his legs were so gone. Yeah.
And then you got to remember, the guy's 275 pounds, pounding on your forehead. It takes a pound or two of pressure, 2 to 5 pounds of pressure to knock somebody out, right? This guy hit you with 275 pounds. Of pressure. And that's not even with the velocity. That's not even with the twist and the turk and the torque and his punches. That's not even with the speed. That's just with the weight.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Come on, man. Yeah, it was
people died in the ring. Look how many people died that year.
Right.
Man, you better catch your lucky stars and be kissing Mark Breland feet to save your life to give you a chance to watch your kids grow up.
Right.
Okay. And Period.
Yeah.
And the reason I feel this emotional about it, because I've been dumped on a lot of times by fighters. And all you try to do is do good for them. You know what I mean? You don't do that to people, man. People are not this expendable object you just toss out. Okay, I'm done with this person. I sucked up all your money, your knowledge, everything you do for me. Now get the hell out. The little door hit you on the ass. Man, you don't do that to people, man.
Yeah.
Karma is a real thing. You know what I mean? Mark was going to the right, you know, financially, otherwise. You know, pain, no, hurt feelings only last for 6 months to a year. And then you get over it.
Yeah, it was a tough scene, but you know, it's over now and they got the trilogy signed for, and you know, it's my understanding that Breland's still with Wilder, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But
hopefully there's
the long route this time. He took the long route to get to the ring, man. That was the longest way to get inside the ring.
I mean, he can blame it on whatever you want.
Jerry, you're playing right now with that.
Yeah, right?
Like, his outfit did not affect his performance. Yeah. But on the other side of the heavyweight division, you know, a lot of people have kind of forgot about Joshua because, you know, he's still has all the rest of the belts other than the WBC. And, you know, he was scheduled to fight Kubrat Pulev recently, but obviously that didn't go down because of the virus and everything. But a lot of people are forgetting about that. And there's, you know, if assuming Fury beats Wilder again, that sets up for a massive, massive matchup between Fury and Joshua, especially in UK. We know Joshua is selling out 80,000 people stadiums, you know, at Wembley when he's fighting Charles Martin. So imagine what they're going to do with, you know, Fury and Joshua together if they do that fight in the UK. I assume maybe it gets drawn to Vegas because of the money and, you know, money talks, but UK, that would be a hell of a scene. You know, I think Fury's the best of them all. I think Fury's would box circles around Joshua and probably beat the hell out of him, maybe worse than he did to Wilder.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, the money determines where you're going to fight at, the location. I mean, and if they do fight in Vegas, let's say for $200 or $300 million, they still can do the satellite screening at the stadium and still make enough of $10 million off the 70,000 people that are going to watch in the stadium. So I think it would be a small movie the way they do it, or vice versa. You know what I mean? I think right now, if Tyson Fury keeps his head on straight, nobody's beating him. Only thing that's going to beat him is retirement.
Or himself, yeah.
Or himself, you know what I'm saying? So physical talent and his confidence. You got to remember, he's a gypsy. They had to fight to see who was the toughest guy for nothing. You know what I mean? For bragging rights.
Yeah, he comes from that bare knuckle lineage, man.
His confidence was installed a long time ago, so I don't think nobody's going to break him mentally. I think he's genius and psychotic. You know, say the thin line between genius and psychotic. He has it both. So
yeah.
I think he's, and then with the talent that we got, and now with the hunger he's putting in, he's going to destroy anybody he fights with in the next 2-3 years to keep his head on straight.
Yeah.
I train and I go for the heavyweight, man, because I think I'm going
to
have a shot.
You know what I mean? Yeah, man. Right? I hope Fury keeps it going and gets these big fights. And, you know, if he beats Wilder and then Joshua, I think he has a legitimate claim at saying that he's a top five heavyweight of all time.
The old guys, bro.
I think he does.
But he's fearless and he's fighting everybody. I definitely get that. And that's what we need. Hey,
you would be Klitschko. Klitschko, Wilder, and Fury if he beat, or Wilder and Joshua if he took all those guys out.
Right. But you got to go back to the throwbacks, bro.
Who's your top five?
Joe Frazier. You got Larry Holmes. You got fucking Rocky Marciano. You got Joe Louis. Come on, man. You got to go back. You got to go back a little bit.
No, you're right. You're right.
No, I'm saying, but the reason why I say that, because those guys, in some cases, was fighting every month, sometimes literally every week, and ducked nobody. Even with their losses, they still won. You know what I mean? So if we have an era like that, a real throwback era, where they fight every month, or not doing that, only fighting 3 times a year because I'm world champion, or 2 times a year. If they get rid of that garbage and fighting every month or every week or every 2 weeks, if permitted, in whatever state you're in, then I would say, okay, he's in the top 5 pound for pound. Until we have those errors again, I don't think what division you're in, you're never going to have somebody that's going to be in the top five pound for pound. But those errors are just uncomparable to now. You know what I mean? Those, like, it's literally throwback. Like,
right. It's just good to see that at least, like, ESPN and Fox are able to get past, you know, the network deals and everything, and they made this fight happen. it's just encouraging for the future, because boxing has lost out, I feel like, on a lot of classic matchups, trying to over marinate things. And it's, you know, we want to see the best fight the best. I want to see Wilder versus Joshua. I want to see all these guys fight each other multiple times. So, like, we hope these networks aren't going to prevent it from happening. And, you know, I like guys like Canelo who are moving up and down weight classes, trying to get multiple belts and keep things exciting. Right. I'd be curious to see if he stays at light heavyweight or moves back down. There's some options there. So,
well, I think those fights are partially by default, because the guy, like you said, the other corners don't want to get with the other corners and make mega fights for whatever reason they might have against each other. But I think, he, like you said, he's trying to keep it exciting. He's taking on whatever challenge that's within the realms of his weight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's classic. And it's classy, too. And it's classical. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great thing. And it's Canelo. So
I love Canelo, man. I want him and Triple G to do the trilogy. Although I do think Triple G is over the hill. I think he's a great, you know, he's a legend in himself, and every legend has one last performance in him. So I don't care that he's over the hill. I think him versus Canelo in the trilogy would be an all-time classic, and I think it could go any way.
Yeah, well, I think Canelo stops him, bro. I think in this particular fight,
I just think Triple G can pull one down and just, you know.
He shot his load already.
What about Pacquiao? You think Pacquiao's got any more left?
Pacquiao? Pacquiao's done too, man. He's done. I mean, him and
Mikey Garcia? They're saying him and Mikey Garcia could be next.
Mikey Garcia going to destroy him. Because you can even see, when you get to a certain
age. You said that about Thurman.
Huh?
Didn't you say Thurman was going to beat Pacquiao? I'm just saying that. I don't know if you said that.
I think I said he's going to beat him up too. But, you know, Keith Thurman, you know, something happened. I don't know what happened with him. But
can't doubt Pacquiao. He had
an equation at this particular time. You know what I'm saying? Nobody had been talking about him fighting such and such and such. He's his own biggest promoter and his biggest fan at this point. But I don't think anything like spectacular. I don't even think anybody's even clamoring for a fight with him, one of the top guys, like at this particular point in his career. No, he had his 15 minutes. But I still like him as a fighter, but I think he had his 15 minutes ready.
Do you think Pacquiao in the welterweight division, there's really not much there for him?
No, well, I think Pacquiao is not much there for Pacquiao. You know what I mean? And when a fighter gets to a particular age, right, you can even see when they start, even when they in shape, their bodies don't look like they ain't shit. They get the old man type body. Their muscles ain't as strong and hard they are. They kind of thin and withery looking. You know what I mean? Is it not, the definition is not always there unless they're taking something? You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, Pacquiao, he might be taking something.
Well, that's been a rumor for years, so I'm like, why would he stop if he could get away with it? You know what I mean? And several other fighters. We're not going to get into that, though. But anyway, you know, I think he got a shot to make a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
But I think as far as, you know, his career is in his rearview mirror at this point. Luckily, he got a belt by I don't know, who he fought to get the belt. I can't remember who he fought.
He got it off of Thurman.
He got it off of Thurman.
Most recently, right? Yeah.
I mean, to my point.
The thing is, Pacquiao. Yeah, the thing is, Pacquiao now, it's like there's really – you know, I like the Mikey Garcia matchup for him, because I'd rather see him fight Mikey Garcia than Errol Spence or Terrence Crawford. Yeah. I think that'd be bad. Like I hate to doubt Manny, but it's like those are two absolute killers in their prime. And you know, Manny, at the end of the day, what is he, 42? I mean, he's not.
Manny, I think, is a little older than that.
Yeah. So.
Done.
We'll see.
I mean, enough money. I mean, look. You got to be smart at some particular point. You got to be like an Andre Ward. You made it to the top, leave. You lost some fights. You had a devastating knockout. You got knocked out devastatingly. You know, you came back from that. You happen to get lucky and get a belt against a young, hungry guy. So now, leave. You're king of the world. You're doing great things to the country. You're running for president, I believe, at this point. Like, leave. You're a politician now.
It's tough for some guys to know when to walk away, you know. So
Ali said it best, even though he didn't do it.
Yeah.
He was saying sometimes you gotta kill the things you love, and sometimes the things you love to kill you. You know what I mean? I think he's at that point now because of his age and because of the punishment he endured throughout his career. It's time to walk away.
Yeah. No, all right, guys. Well, I appreciate you guys taking some time, and I do want to let you guys know also it's gonna be released soon, but I got a fantasy heavyweight fantasy bracket, like March Madness style, that's gonna be dropping soon. And I want you guys to look out for that, because there's gonna be some fun prizes to win at the end. I got a little fight shop that is gonna provide some stuff. It's got some cool, you know, I can't reveal everything yet, but it's going to be cool, man. It's going to be fun. And some of those heavyweight fantasy matchups that we kind of talked about, maybe a Joe Frazier versus Tyson Fury, things like that in the mix. So, but anyways, thanks for taking some time to talk with me. And I'd love you guys to shout out, you know, where the listeners can follow you on Instagram or whatever social media you guys got.
Well, you can follow me at Trainer Jerry Joseph. You can follow us at GG Fitness Studio. You can follow our foundation at GG Foundation. Real estate, we're at 380 South 4th Street, Brooklyn, Williamsburg. So you can come check us out. My partner, Coach Kelly Richardson, as well. And just come follow us, man.
Yeah, so you can follow me at Coach Kelly Rich at Instagram, Coach Kelly Rich on Twitter, Coach Kelly Rich on Facebook. You can follow us at ggefitnessstudio.com. You can come down to our place in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, 380 South 4th Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11211. You can follow Jerry again at Trainer Jerry Joseph on Instagram. You can follow us at our foundation at GGE Foundation 380 on Instagram. You can follow the fitness studio, GGE Fitness Studio on Instagram, GGE Enterprise on Instagram, GGE Real Estate on Instagram. You know what I mean? And that's what it is, man. That's where we at.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys. Everyone listening, make sure to follow on Instagram, Brooklyn Boxing Podcast. Follow these guys. Subscribe on YouTube. And I'm excited to get this interview out and dropped. I'll make sure to send it to you guys right as we make it live.
Okay. And stay in shape, boy, because I'm coming for you.
I'm coming, man. I'm running every day. I'm coming for you.
Up, man. Appreciate
all right, guys. Appreciate it, bro.